Growing your business doesn't have to be difficult. It's all about mastering a few key techniques, systems, and mindsets. Welcome to Foot Traffic, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your local business. I'm your host, Stacey Tushel. I've been an entrepreneur for over 15 years, and I own multiple seven-figure businesses. Together, you and I are going to get you more customers in the door, more profit in your pocket, and more happiness in your home. Let's transform your business starting right now. Hey there, welcome to Foot Traffic. Today we are talking about clockworking your business. I am interviewing Adrienne Dorison, the co-founder of Run Like Clockwork. And this was a book I have recently read and knew immediately I needed to get connected with Adrienne. We are going to talk about how well your business can run without you. And I know many of you are thinking there's not a chance, there's no way. You might not be sure and you might need to test it. And Adrienne's really going to walk us through some steps. Now, it's really, really important because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, right? Something could pull us out of our business. Maybe we get sick. Maybe one of our family members gets sick. Like, you just don't know. Maybe you're preparing for a baby, right? There's going to be things that pop up unexpectedly. And the big question is, how well is your business going to run without you? Will revenue decrease? Will it stay the same? Will it grow? Right? Like, there are so many opportunities out there for you to really invest in building a real business with a solid foundation. All right. Not something that's going to fall apart the second you leave it. We are diving in. Adrienne has helped hundreds and hundreds of business leaders and teams from Fortune 500 corporations to fast-growing startups. She is going to talk about really using systems to make you guys ultra, ultra efficient. That should be exciting to all of you. I know I'm excited to dive in. This is a great episode. I can't wait for you to meet Adrienne Dorison. Adrienne, welcome to Foot Traffic. I'm so excited to have you on today.
I am super excited to be here. So thanks for having me, Stacey.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that people always come to me for is they're asking me questions like, how are you able to do so much? And one of the biggest things I say is obviously that now the word that I've heard you say, clockworking, we really have clockworked my first business that I have. And as I'm building this kind of baby business that's only about 4 years old, I realize the need to clockwork. And I realize that a lot of people, especially if they're building personal brands, they can be in a situation where this gets tough to clockwork it. So I'm super excited to have you on. We're going to dive in today. Before we do, can you kind of just explain your background a little bit and just everything that my audience kind of needs to know about you in this next little bit?
Yes. So I come from the corporate world. I was in the corporate world of manufacturing before starting my own company. So I worked in that space for many years doing operational efficiency, Lean Six Sigma type of work for a large corporation, and got to a point where I felt like the corporate red tape wasn't serving my expertise anymore, and I really wanted to be able to do more. And so I kind of started doing some consulting on the side with no real intention of like starting a business. I call myself like an accidental entrepreneur. Like, I didn't really mean to do that, but worked out. So I started consulting on the side, helping people, you know, figure out how do they get more results for less input. So like really doing lean approach to small business operations. And I just loved working with small businesses because they were so much more agile and open and ready to dive in and actually make changes. And so from there, had my own consulting company for about 5 years. And then last year partnered with my co-founder of our company, Run Like Clockwork. His name is Mike McCallowitz, and he and I collaborated on the book Clockwork. You may know him from like Profit First and
Yes.
Plan, other incredible small business books, but he and I, you know, worked on the material for Clockwork, and I run the company, and essentially he is writing the next book. So that's kind of how our partnership works. And so that's kind of the quick and dirty on how I got here.
Yes, amazing. So I want to kind of dive in and ask you, like, what are some of the biggest problems you see when a small business owner comes to you in the first place? Like, what are some, like, you just know, okay, if we're going to work together, this is probably going to come up.
Yeah. So, I mean, the number one thing is just valuing people's time, just like we would value their money. So I'm always looking at like where their time is going. But the number one thing is that's going to come up is resistance to letting things go. Yeah. Or believing that like we need to be the one to do it. So that's like a huge thing that we have to walk through with our clients and support them on, and also make sure they feel really supported by their team and the systems that we're putting in place so that they can trust that yes, they can let some of these things go. Maybe the company still needs to be doing them, but maybe they don't need to be doing them. And that comes from both like a systemic change as well as like a change in ego potentially and letting go of some control. So there's like a lot of, I feel, self and leadership development that people don't expect when they come into doing some like really strategic tactical like systems and team that we're going to be working on as we clockwork the business. They run up a lot of around like some of their own resistances. So I would say that's like number one thing is I can't let this go, right?
Yeah, or
like I have to be the one to do it.
Definitely. No, and it's hard. So do you feel like if somebody comes to you and they are just such a control freak, they really want to keep certain things, is this something that anybody can master this skill, or are there certain personalities? I mean, I'm sure they're harder than others, but do you really feel like this can help anybody?
I do, but I think you have to be open to at least the vision of what you want to create for your life and your business, right? So if that vision isn't changed from where you are right now, like if you like the way things are, then great, you can keep them, right? No matter what you're doing, that's your personal prerogative. But I think if you have a different ideal outcome and a different vision for your, you know, your perfect day or the team that you want and how you, your stress levels, all of that, if you have a different ideal, then we can absolutely figure it out. Sometimes it just takes a different approach. I really love like understanding people and their personality types, because it really helps me understand how I need to maybe approach that. Because with, you know, people that are more controlling, we want to maybe take a little bit of a slower approach, or like stepstone it a little bit, or, you know, make sure we have even more systems than someone who isn't feeling that way might need to have, right? So I use like a lot of personality tests and just understanding people to understand, you know, okay, if this is the way you're feeling about this type of control or feeling like there's no way, then let's go for an easier win so they can start like building up those small wins and seeing that it's working before we ask them to like take away, yeah, the thing that they really do feel like they need to be in control of or continue to be doing. So I try to start with everyone, but specifically people that are feeling the resistance around it, trying to start with like some really small, easy things that they maybe hate doing that we could be like, okay, let's get rid of this. How would you like that? Right.
Yeah. And that's such a great strategy for everybody listening, to get your customer a quick win. It builds their confidence. It gets them on board. I absolutely love that. That's one of the strategies you guys are using. Now,
it's helpful for them too, right? Because then they're starting to believe in it more, which is what I need them to do. And it can feel very overwhelming to look at our process, because in our book, we prescribe like a 12 to 18 month kind of roadmap. And so sometimes people come into the program and it's, you know, certain personality types, that's too far for them to be thinking. Like they can't even see it. Like they can't think that far ahead. And so if we can just start incrementally shifting it, it can keep them engaged in the process and show them like, oh, they're like, even if I don't get all the way there, this small change gave me a better quality of life. So that's worth it. Let me maybe do another one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I feel like a lot of people, they think of a big team or just a team in general as a headache. Like they'll hear how many employees I have and they're like, oh, I would never. Oh no, like I could never do that. And I'm always fighting for, no, a team is like, they're here to help you. Like what do you see that a lot too? Are people coming into it almost like anti-team, or is it something that you're really teaching them how in the program?
Yeah, I love this because it's like literally on one of our like sales pages, information pages.
Good, okay.
It's like, are you thinking that a you know, growing a team means like a bigger headache, right? Or when you think about the growth of your business, you know, some of our clients are thinking, oh God, I would love to grow the business to this extent, but I don't want to have to manage a team. Like, yes. That's like a big thing that people struggle with. And I always tell people that your business growth and vision is entirely up to you. I have no stake in the game of how big you or your team or your company actually gets. But what I always want is for it to come from a really true place, not from a place of fear, right? So I think that a lot of people fear the having to manage a team or the stress that they currently associate with that. And then they stop themselves from having the bigger vision that they really do have because of this thing that is absolutely solvable. So if that is the association that you have, then there's just something mismanaged potentially within the team, whether it's we don't have the right systems or processes in place, or maybe we don't have the right team. And so our approach is, yes, there are things that we can do to make you understand that having the right team, people in the right seats with the right systems and doing things in the right proportions, like that should actually make your life way easier than having no team, right? So the idea of feeling like, oh, if there's more team, then it's going to be more work, then there's probably something happening between when you're like divvying out tasks versus like what we would call true delegation. So a lot of people get themselves stuck in what we call the deciding phase with team members, which means that as you bring on these team members, you think that you've delegated to them. And so people tell, yeah, have a team, it'll make things so much easier, but you still haven't let go of the decision-making piece and given them a specific outcome. And so all the decisions still live with you. And so then instead of you doing, you know, spending that extra time on the work that you need to be doing, you've got these team members and now they're coming to you all day long with like, how do I do this? Or can you answer this for me? Or do you want this or that? Or what should we do about this? And like decision-making is the most neurologically, energetically exhausting thing that we can do. So of course, at the end of the day, you feel like, oh my God, I got nothing done. I answered 407 decisions. Like,
right.
This is not easier. Let me just go back to doing it all myself. And then people get into the trap of firing the team, doing it all themselves, potentially even making more money if they haven't fully shifted to that like full delegation.
Yeah.
And delegation looks a little differently than deciding, because delegation is when you're giving those team members much more autonomy. You're assigning them an outcome, and then you're letting them make the decisions within that area. And that's going to, number one, be way easier for you because now you can focus on the things that you need to do. They can focus on the things that they need to do, which means the company is going to grow. Everyone's going to feel like they're adding more value. And you're not going to get caught in this like cyclical trap of feeling like the team is exhausting you to a point right. where you'd rather just not have a team, you know?
Well, and that's where I think people are having this fear or this dread of, oh, I could never do this, because that's what they're envisioning, or maybe they've experienced it in the past.
Yeah.
And I think with, we've been going through the book Clockwork, and we're clockworking our business, and we're asking questions, and we're, I'm catching when I'm deciding a lot. I'm going, oh wow, they're coming to me with questions, and I can equip them with confidence to answer this themselves and to move forward, or I can make it simple in the moment and quickly answer it for them. And we know that long term, it's just not going to help us.
Totally.
So that's been really
great
for us.
It's so much easier, right? Like it's so much easier and faster to answer it in the moment.
Yes.
That is not the long-term approach that we want to think about. So I always tell my clients, I'm like, you're going to have to slow down a little bit, right? Before we can speed up, but it's going to allow you to either, number one, have that better quality of life, have more free time if that's what you're after, or have more time to focus on the things that you really need to be doing in the business, or going to allow you to actually scale much more effectively if that's the goal. So a lot of our clients have different goals. Some of those are one in the same. They want both of those things at the same time, and they can have them. But there's like really specific things that there are reasons your team members aren't making those decisions. And the number one reason is you're making them for them and you continue to do that. So you've also trained them that you don't want them to make the decision.
Right. Well, and that's the thing I remember, I think I either heard you say this on a podcast or in your book, but I was really trying to say to them, listen, I have hired you because I believe you are the best person for this job. So I want you to go out there and figure out which one you're going to do. And a lot of times we're testing things. There's not a right answer. So it's like, try it. Let's see what happens. Let's look at the results. And the more I give them that confidence, the more you can start to see them feel that confidence too. So that's been a really great thing for us.
For sure. I tell people the three reasons that someone is not making a decision on your team is number one, they don't have permission. So we potentially haven't given them permission, or we've potentially taken it away by changing a decision. Like, as soon as they make it, we're like, actually, no, I want you to go the other way. They're like, yeah. Oh, okay, I guess I'm not ready to make these decisions. They want to make them. So number one, permission. Number two, information. You know, we as entrepreneurs, like, we're a little bit more risk tolerant than most people. And just like you said, a lot of times we don't even have all the information that we need and we're just making a decision. But sometimes there is information that we are running through, whether it's in our heads or there is a Google Doc that they don't have access to, or another, you know, system that they've never seen before, or past, you know, data that they aren't privy to. And so sometimes the reason they're not making a decision is because they don't have that information. And so if we can get them that information, or if they can become aware that they don't have that information, they can request it from us. And then the third reason, like you just mentioned, is confidence. And so a lot of times it's not about giving them anything else or even creating another system for information. Like, if they have permission and they have information, sometimes they just need your vote of confidence. And as you continue to give that to them and reassure them that you trust them and that they're making good decisions, and even when they don't make good decisions, it's a safe place for them to make mistakes, then they're going to make more decisions, which is exactly what we want them to do. And also recognizing them for the decisions when they're making them. So being, you know, verbal and proud of them when they're like, hey, that's a great decision. Or, I'm proud you made the decision, even if it was the wrong one. You did it. And that was probably hard.
It's so important to give that positive reinforcement too, because I think it's so easy for us as the owner just to kind of nitpick, like, no, I don't like this, I don't like that. And then the things we do like, we just skim over. And we have to really go, okay, this, you know, if it's a social media manager, this Instagram story graphic, I loved. Like, I liked how you did this. I like how you did that. And then they start to go, okay, I'm getting this. I'm seeing what she's liking and what she's not. So that's a huge one.
For sure.
Now, there are four D's in the book. We've covered deciding and delegating. What are the other two?
Yeah. So the first is doing, right? So that's when you're like actually doing the work. And when we all start our businesses, typically if you're starting your business solo, you're the one doing everything. But there's still probably a subset of doing that you are responsible for, especially if you're still a big part of the day-to-day operation. So you just want to understand, like, what am I actually doing? And then also getting clear on what are the things I really should be doing, or like the things that I contribute the most value to when I'm doing, and how can I get it to the point where I'm only doing those things? So for Mike, for example, the only things we really want him to be doing, my business partner, is speaking or writing, like writing his next book. If he's doing anything other than that, it's something we want to shift off his plate because it's not a good use of his time. So Identification of like what your ideal doing is for the business and where you are now, right? Which might look very different, and that's okay. That second one is deciding, like we talked about, where you're actually assigning a task to someone else, but you still own all the decisions around it. So this is typically what happens when we first bring team members onto our team, or maybe we just didn't learn how to properly delegate, which is very common because no one ever teaches us that except now, right? So when you are the person that has to make all the decisions, or when they have to come to you to understand what to do next, you're in the deciding phase of business. The third one is delegation. So when we're actually assigning an outcome to a person so that they're actually responsible. So an outcome being a specific metric or a specific completion that we're looking for on a project or in their role specifically, so that they have the autonomy to make decisions, whatever they need to do to get that outcome. And they know that they're kind of responsible for everything leading towards that outcome. And then there's designing, which is all about the creating of the future. And that's the strategic, the visionary. That's where I want most of my CEOs to be spending a good chunk of their time, because that's really usually the biggest value that they can bring to their team, is leading the vision and being able to communicate the vision to the team, and you know, leading the culture of the entire company. So designing is all about what you're doing to create the future.
Do you have certain percentages that we should be striving for in this area, in these four areas?
Yes. So as a, we have two different situations for percentages. So the first one is, like, as an entire team, what we do is we have our clients and their teams do some time analysis, and then it, like, our spreadsheet, like, auto calculates it into, you know, percentages for each of these different work phases, right? So for doing, your team as a whole, as a company, we need to be doing about 80% of the time, because doing is what really adds value to the marketplace, right? So I'm never looking at these as, like, positive or negative. They're all neutral to me. It's just who is doing them may need to shift, right? So doing is very valuable to the business. We just want to make sure everyone is doing the right doing for their roles and in the right proportion. So 80% in the doing. Deciding as a company, we want that to be about 2%. So pretty low, because it's just an inefficiency. Anytime that someone cannot make a decision on their own. I mean, think about this when you call someone, you're calling your phone company, you're trying to get an answer on something, and they're like, what, let me put you on hold. I don't have authorization to do that. I need to go ask a manager. Now you're on hold, you're waiting. It's really frustrating. And that's essentially what your team is having to do every time they don't have an answer for something. So it's a really big inefficiency. So we want to reduce that to about 2%. Delegating about 8%, right? So a little bit higher there, because I would much prefer you and the team to be spending more time training people, really outsourcing those outcomes, making sure that people feel solid in their areas of responsibility, and spending a little bit more time there outsourcing those outcomes if needed. And then as a company, 10% in the designing. So really thinking about the strategic vision piece at about 10% of your, you know, full makeup. Now that goes for all companies. It's just a suggested kind of mix. But then as an individual, you're going to have your own ideal mix. Like as a CEO, your mix should look very different than that company mix, right? Because your doing and your designing may very well be flip-flopped. So you might have 10% doing and 80% designing. And this also is based on your personal desires, right? Because I know certain CEOs that like to keep a piece of that doing, maybe even 30, 40, 50%. But I just always tell them, like, just be very aware of where that is dependent on you to be revenue driving for the company. Yeah. Like if you're the only one able to do that doing, it's still very dependent on you. If you enjoy doing that doing and you want to keep it in there, I'm totally fine with that. I just always want people to make that decision from a really intentional and conscious place versus, you know, the reason we talk about clockwork is because, like, we want you to be able to step out of the business for whether it's a life event, or maybe you want to start another business like yourself, Stacey, or like myself, I'm pregnant. So I'm like, I want to step out of the business to have a maternity leave. Right. So I don't want specific doing to be dependent on me. So that, like, when I do leave for maternity leave, my clients basically don't even notice that it happened.
Right.
Is the goal.
So let's say somebody right now is in a big doing phase, like they are 80% and they are doing a lot of it. You share this, I'm trying to think of the story in the book about somebody who does get ill and they're in the hospital for 4 weeks or something, and like their revenue just drastically drops. Can you kind of share, like, what could possibly happen if you are the main person that's bringing in the revenue?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. Like, the story is,
you can go into more detail of what that story was.
Yeah, it's about a company. They were doing branding work, so design and branding work, very, you know, hands on. And their names are Elise and Scott Grice. And Elise got very sick, and she was the one kind of doing all of the designing for those clients. And so she was doing. And then as soon as, and the business was going great, right? So taking on more clients, more and more work, making more money, all seems well. And then unexpectedly got ill. And all of a sudden they weren't able to continue the doing, because she was the one who kind of everything was built around in terms of the end product for the customers, the branding and design work that she was doing. So it encouraged them to essentially redesign, right? Like thinking about that final D, the design, like creating of the future in a different way for them. They were like, we never want to go through this again. We want to design something that isn't dependent on either of us as an individual in terms of our doing. So they created a completely different business model for themselves. But just to think about, you know, that scenario, and I talk about this all the time because I think it's so important to understand that all of us feel invincible. None of us feel like we're about to get sick or something's going to happen to us. But unfortunately, more often than not, when people come to me to get their business running like clockwork, it's not because they're going on a vacation, which is what we talk about in the book. We use this idea of like, could you take a 4-week vacation? And that is that's the ideal. That's the luxury that we prepare for. But so many of us aren't in a place mentally where we can, you know, get prepared, you know, enough in advance to say, you know what, I want to do this work so I can take my vacation. What's going to happen is something in your life is going to come up, and I want you to be able to step away from the business and know that you can not only continue to serve clients, because that's one area, but also continue to be able to build revenue and grow and take on new clients and customers. So if your sales systems or your lead generation systems or your delivery systems aren't able to operate without you, that's something we want to address, so that whether it's a positive life event, what do you need to do to start moving the needle and turning the dial to remove yourself from as much of the doing as possible, whether that is through systemization, through additional team members in the future who can train to do some of that doing for you. And like I said, this isn't an overnight process, but at least starting to have that vision of like, okay, do I want that for myself? And what are the things that I want to start doing now? And what would be my ideal, you know, work day where maybe things aren't super dependent on me?
Absolutely.
Maybe I can pop in here and there, you know?
Right. And that's like the luxury. That is the dream, right?
Yeah.
And I think it could be overwhelming to hear that, okay, this is going to take a year or a year and a half or however long, but at the same time, it should be exciting to know that it doesn't have to happen overnight. You can gradually get there, and it's so, so worth it. Last year was the first time we went to Italy for 2 weeks with the family, and I didn't take my computer, and I was nervous.
Yes.
I'm like, can I do this? I've gone on like 5-day vacations and 7-day and nothing like 2 weeks. And it was so great. I came back. I was not interrupted while I was there. My team really handled it. And then when I came back, it wasn't even like I had to play catch up. And that was the best feeling, knowing that I wasn't coming back to a million emails and a million different things I had to quickly do. So I can see how, I know in the book you talk about 4 weeks, because it really, you don't know what's going to happen. Like an entire month, there's, you know, bills and things like that. So you can really find out if your business is clockwork, which makes so much sense.
And that's like why we call it like the ultimate litmus test for your business, right? Is these 4 weeks where you exit. And in our, you know, prescription, in our process, we build you up. So you do a week and then you do 2 weeks and then you'll do 3 weeks, right? So that you're not just like pulling the Band-Aid off for 4 weeks. And everything leading up to that is kind of your training for game day. And not just you, but the team as well and the systems that we're building. So I think that it is, to me, I know that people can feel like, oh my God, 12 to 18 months is going to take so long. But like, you're making progress that entire way.
Yes.
So things are just going to keep getting better and better and better. And to me, it's also like really exciting to know that like, oh, we don't have to do this overnight, and it's not meant to be done overnight, and it's not a quick fix, which means it will be much more sustainable.
Right.
Because anytime you're like whiplashing something from like 0 to 60, you better believe it's going to whiplash the other way, right?
Well, so you're like building
good.
Yeah, you're building foundational stuff here. Like, this isn't happening overnight. This has to take a little while. So I love this. Last question I want to ask you, because it's such a big part of the book as well, is this QBR that you guys talk about.
Yeah.
I would love for you to kind of share what that is, just so people can really understand.
Yeah, so the QBR, we were talking, you know, when we were working on the book about understanding what the most efficient organizations on the planet were, and what, so that we could understand what they were doing. So I happen to have this random background in wildlife ecology as well. And so Mike was researching this, and he came to me and he's like, do you know that bees are actually the most efficient organization on the planet? Like, it's not Coca-Cola, it's not Toyota, it's bee colonies, which I knew. And I was like, yes, of course, right? Like, nature is the most efficient organization on the planet because they're always trying to conserve energy and be super efficient with everything that they're doing. So when we were looking at the bees, what we understood was that the bees have this one most important singular activity that they are doing and they're protecting above all else, right? And this is what we call the queen bee role. And we call it the role because it's not about the individual. And that's important for you to acknowledge whether you're a personal brand or not, just like a, you know, brick and mortar, any type of business. It's about the role, not the individual. Okay. And so when we think about bees, the queen bee role is actually the most important activity to the survival of the colony, as well as the colony thriving. And if that queen bee role is not getting served, the colony will not survive. So that role for bee colonies is the laying of the eggs. It's not to say that the other things aren't important, because each of the bees also has what we call a primary role. It's something that they are responsible for doing. So they might be, you know, the nurse bees, where they're responsible for helping to, you know, bring up and protect the young larva, or they might be bees that are responsible for going out and getting food for the colony. But we know that the bees actually will protect the queen bee role before they go and do their primary role. So they will actually stop doing their primary role to make sure that the queen bee role is protected and served first, because they know that none of the other jobs really matter if this thing isn't happening. And we saw this article where there was 20,000 bees like hopped on this car for 2 days to protect their queen because she got like stuck on this car.
Wow.
And so they followed her for 2 straight days. And it was just such an example of they will leave all, like, because yes. They realize like none of the, like, there's no reason to go get more food. There's no reason to protect the babies if this thing isn't happening, right? And so it's the laying of the eggs. And what we also identified is that your organization has a queen bee role too. And if we can identify what that queen bee role is, what is the singular most important activity that your business does to survive and thrive in your market, which is essentially, how do we deliver on our big promise? What is the activity that we do to maintain that and to make sure that it's happening? And if you can identify what that is and rally your team to protect and serve it, it's going to be the best efficiency tool that you've ever created. And as our teams and our clients work on identification of what that is for their individual business, they start removing things. They're like, wow, well, now that we know this is the most important thing, right. Like we don't really need to do this anymore or this. And it's also a really great tool for priority setting from team members and yourself. So if someone, you know, only has limited, you know, hours or energy in a day, which they do, and there's either we protect and serve the QBR or we do this other random thing, the choice is always protect and serve the QBR. So it's even a tool for creating more efficiency through autonomy and prioritization that the entire team understands. It's not even something you need to communicate with your customers. It's just something you need to align with and understand from an efficiency perspective internally. So we help our clients identify, like, what is that for you? So that you can really utilize it with the team and through metrics and things like that we go into.
Yeah, because I feel like when you say queen bee role, people are thinking a person, but then you say activity and now they're going, I'm not sure what that would be.
Right.
So I can see how that would be something that, and this is something too, to do with your team as well, because it might be, you might be so close to it, you don't see it, but somebody on your team is like, I think it's this, and it'll 100%. Spark that.
And even like, we even like tell our clients, like, ask your customers too, like what's the big thing or the reason. We always kind of reverse engineer your QBR by first asking, like, what's your big promise to your customer, right? And usually that's front and center on your marketing somewhere. Maybe you're too close to it, you don't even realize it. Like, ours is on the front of our book, Design Your Business to Run Itself, right? Like, that's our big promise to our customer. And then if you peel that back a layer, thinking about, okay, now how do we do that? What's the activity we do to actually be able to deliver on that big promise. And so a lot of times, yes, your team can help you identify this. And if you're super stuck, your clients usually know it, even though you're not specifically talking about it as like a QBR. Like, they know what it is because they feel it, right? If you're doing it. So
absolutely,
sometimes asking them can be helpful because, yeah, it's much easier to identify for someone else than it is to identify for yourself.
We did a survey to existing clients, and I think there was 10 of my like dream clients that I just love working with, and they were asked a few questions, and all 10 of them answered one of the questions the same way, and I would never have said that. Ever. And it was clearly so obvious for them, but it just wasn't for me. So I think that's a really great one to say your existing clients for sure.
Yeah.
I love this. Adrian, this has been so good. Where can everybody go find the book, find you, all the details there?
Yes. So everything is at runlikeclockwork.com. So if you want to find the book, find free resources, find out more about us, our team, our programming, runlikeclockwork.com is the hub for all those things. We also have a podcast, things like that. So yeah, this is a fun conversation. So thank you for having me, and I hope people found value from this.
Oh, definitely.
But if you want to take it a step further, I would definitely suggest reading the book.
Yeah, the book is great. You guys definitely go grab it. Go check out Adrian and Mike. Adrian, again, thank you for being here. I so appreciate your time.
Thank you, Stacey.
And that's it for another episode of Foot Traffic. But don't worry, if you're craving more business building guidance, I've got two places to send you. First, be sure to join our free Facebook group at foottraffic.club. You'll get support from other small business owners like you, plus exclusive content from me. And if you're looking for more actionable advice and step-by-step resources for getting more people in the door, head over to foottrafficpodcast.com. It's time we take your business to the next level.